Sunday Morning's Thoroughbred Magazine. For the next hour, we're talking horses. Here's Joe McKinnon.
Good morning, everyone. Great to have your company for Talking Horses this week. Spring has finally sprung, and the first Group 1 of the Australian racing season was staged yesterday at Caulfield, the Menzies Stakes. We also saw some top-class action in Sydney, and Winx made it 19 wins in a row in the Group 2 Chelmsford Stakes. It was another heart-stopping performance, this time because of the addition of earmuffs. She relaxed maybe a little bit too much in the run, and red excitement set them a merry chase, almost causing the upset of the century. The mare had to dig deep to peg him back in the last furlong. In the Memsie in Melbourne, it was a much more straightforward affair, and Vega Magic provided West Australian breeder and owner Wally Daly his second Group 1 win. He joins us shortly. Also on the show, we talked to Coolmore stud Sebastian Hutch. Star Spangled Banner sired a stakes winner in France this week, and there's much excitement around the arrival down under of his Triple Crown winning barnmate, American Pharaoh. And later, Matt Hill catches up with one of Seoul's leading jockeys, Johan Victoire, ahead of the upcoming Korea Cup and Korea Sprint.
RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
Vega Magic lets down. Two lengths in front of Blackheart Bart. Haydock into the clear, followed by Toes and Stardom back to the inside from Lure Remain. But Vega Magic goes for home at the 150. Still two lengths in front of Blackheart Bart. Vega Magic going well. And Vega Magic win 12, and it's a big one.
It was a win for the West yesterday in the first Group 1 of the spring. The Memsie Stakes going the way of Vega Magic after a bold front-running performance by the big chestnut gelding by Lope de Vega. His breeder joins us on Talking Horses this morning, Wally Daly. Congratulations, Wally.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much. That we were very pleased with the support the Victorian public has given us to us.
And it was a Western Australian quinella, of course, Blackheart Bart, and he don't mind finishing 1-2 on occasion?
No, it's, I prefer to finish one. I don't like the number two idea.
Now, tell us the story of the background of Vega Magic and you as the breeder and the choice of Lope de Vega for your mare.
I'm not the only breeder. George, my brother, who was a trainer, a very successful trainer, and has become very ill, but just recently. But he picked out Admirable, who was a Magic Albert mare and one of the English sales, and she went well. And then we had a horse called Detection by Chamadel, and one of Sir P's mares, Detection, and we were very impressed with the Chamadel blood and the goes back to the Giant Causeway blood, and we thought, well, Lope de Vega, we saw his record in France and so forth, and when Tinkler bought him out, we thought, well, you know, this has got a big chance, and so we had a crack at it, you know. And I think Australia's very, very lucky in as much as we, a bit unlike the Americans, we get the best of the English, we get the best of the American bloods, and we can pick them, so we were a bit lucky there. It's, you know, it's lady luck sometimes, you know, so that's where it went. But it was George's idea to go to Lope de Vega, and we went and we had three foals, and then we had Admirable Miss. She lost one the next one. They were very big foals, and then we've got another one at home, and we've got a sister. And so it's a very good decision by my brother George.
And Admiral Bull herself was a very good race mare, a multiple winner in Perth that you also bred and raced.
That's correct. Now, we didn't breed it. No, I think that honour goes to Arthur and his brother. With Magic Albert. He's the Magic Albert blood.
Mitchell family.
Mitchell family, yeah. They're very good breeders, you know, and they're very probably very good friends of ours in some ways, yeah.
Yes, and your brother George is a real student of Tessio, I believe.
Yes, he studied the books and everything like that. He's he loved race horses. It probably cost us a fortune up to date, but you know, we've struck a bit of gold just now, so it's very good. But George, you know, it's very fortunate because George has been very ill lately. He had a bad hip replacement, which has leaked cobalt into his system and affected his, you know, a lot of his organs and so forth. And it's now the horse is replaying, and it makes George is getting some money together in case the worst case scenario comes. And he's a very happy, you know, it's giving him a real good kick along.
Yeah, it's always a good tonic when you can win a race anywhere, let alone a Group 1. It's your second Group 1 with this horse, who also won, of course, the Goodwood Handicap. His record overall is absolutely outstanding, Wally. He's now won 12 from 17 of his starts.
Yeah, it's a lot better than that if you really analyse, but without going into it, I think he's a very honest racehorse. You can put him anywhere. His cruising speed's good. And he has a go, you know. We think he's a good horse, and he'll always acquit himself well. And we'll see what the future holds, you know. We're not setting too high targets for him. We're just going to take it as it comes.
And the decision to have him entrusted to David Hayes has proven worthwhile. You don't get much better than him as a conditioner of Group 1 horses. And after the race yesterday, he discussed with the Racing.com team some bold plans potentially, and that is that the Everest could be a possibility.
Well, you know, we'll just see what comes along, you know. I'm not going to lose any sleep with the Everest or anything else if it comes along and it's an attractive offer and we think the horse is right, and we'll have a crack at it. You know, there's plenty of other races in Melbourne and that sort of thing. We'll just see what happens.
And the Cox Plate's been mentioned in dispatches too.
No, I don't think we'll take Winks on this year. I think we might wait a year.
Well, you would have seen her unbelievable win yesterday. What can you say about her?
Well, she's a freak and she's a very, very good horse. Even on soft going, she's got webbed feet, I think. I know, what can you say about a true, very good champion?
It was interesting yesterday that the horse went out in front and made a real match of it in the finish. It would be interesting if you did decide to, or were game enough to take her on in a Cox Plate, you might be able to go out in front a bit similarly like you did yesterday and
I don't think we'd take on the Cox Plate because I think shorter distance we might be tempted to take her on, but not in a Cox Plate.
Yeah. And your own story as a breeder and owner, Wally, in Western Australia, have you had a lot of horses over the years?
Yes, I think there's a history, you know. I've had George's... I caught the disease of George... I was running business and that, and he always, with the hotel businesses, he always wanted to be involved in horses, and then we had a bit of success with Vows and Sir T and Jack Silvetta and things like that. I caught the bug, and unfortunately I've got the disease.
And it no doubt was a greatly received performance over in the West yesterday, that of Vegas Magic, because the West often does get a good horse that comes across to the East and performs during spring, and he's the latest of those, Vega Magic.
Yes, I think the West, I've been very happy with the support we've got from the Western Australian public, and I'm very happy with the support we've got from the Victorian public. It's really amazed me the way they've supported this horse. It's been very good to see.
So where then to next is the plan with Vega Magic?
There's no plan. It's just we'll take it as it comes. You know, it's been... I've been very impressed by the support in Victoria for this horse.
Yes. No, that's terrific. And you enjoyed the day out in general, I'm sure.
Yes, I have. It's been a nervous day, butterflies and everything like that early in the day. And the joy of winning and the excitement of seeing the horse do it so easy has really made it a very good day.
Yes, and for you as an owner and breeder, is this possibly your greatest highlight so far?
I would say it has to be, yes. We had Jack Silvetta. He won about 20 races and 970,000 in Western Australia. And oh, he was a very exciting horse as well, but Vega Magic would have to be the best.
Yeah. Well, congratulations once again, Wally, and thank you very much for taking the time to share some insight into your journey with this lovely chestnut horse. He's going to win you plenty more races, and good luck for the rest of the spring.
Thanks, Joe, and I just thank everybody from the public for support.
That's Wally Daly. Group 1 racing returned to Caulfield yesterday, and the first of the black type races on the card was the Group 3 McNeil Stakes over 1,200 metres. The winner was Merchant Navy, trained by Kieran Maher. He's a 3-year-old colt by Fastnet Rock out of the Snippets mare Legally Bay. He was sold at the 2016 Inglis Australian Easter Yearling Sale for $350,000. Some of his winning siblings include Carbon Tycoon, Jolly Bay, Legalistic, Maroon Bay and Zara Bay. The Ladbrokes Cockrum Stakes, a Group 3 over 1,200 metres, and that was won by John Maher's mare, Savannah Amore. She's a 4-year-old by Love Conquers All, out of the Stravinsky mare, Savannah Lamar. She was sold through the 2015 Inglis Classic Yearling Sale Summer Book for $100,000. She's a relation to winners Miss Jamaica and Young America. The Group 3, The Heath, over 1,100 metres, and Darren Weir's Voodoo Lad scored a very good win. He's a 6-year-old gelding by I Am Invincible out of the Gilded Time mare, O Fortuna. He was sold for a very modest amount of money, $36,000, at the 2013 Inglis Scone Select Yearling Sale. He's a lovely horse and a relation to winners Cafe Fouquet and Husson's Fortune. The eye-catching run in the race came from the runner-up So Si Bon from the Robbie Langyard. Big wins in store for him this spring, you'd think. The Group 1 Memsey Stakes won by the Loop de Vega gelding Vega Magic. He's a 5-year-old out of a Magic Albert mare, Admirable. He was not offered at the yearling sales, of course, bred by the Dailies, who were guests on our program earlier. Winning siblings to Vega Magic include Mireille and Vega Dior. Fellow Western Australian Black Heart Bart was the runner-up, a son of Blackfriars, and Toes and Stardom was third placed in the Group 1 feature at Caulfield yesterday from the Darren Weir team, a 7-year-old horse by Deep Impact. Race 8 was a listed race over 1,700 metres, and it was won by Lindsay Park's Hell or High Water, a 5-year-old mare by Not a Single Doubt, out of a More Than Ready mare, Get Ready Bertie, sold through the 2014 Inglis Australian Easter Yearling Sale for $210,000. It was an excellent day of racing at Randwick yesterday. The first of the features there was the Group 3 Concord Stakes over 1,000 metres, won by the Snowden team's Red Zell, a 5-year-old gelding by Snitzel out of the Rubiton mare Mill Rich. He was eventually sold through the 2014 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sale to Triple Crown Syndications for $120,000. Winning relations to Red Zell include Declaree, God Willing, Inquisition and Rich Esprit. The Group 2 Furious Stakes over 1,200 metres was won impressively by the Lindsay Park Racing Team's Formality, a 3-year-old filly by Fastnet Rock out of the Jolly's Halo mare Jolly's Shinju, sold at the 2016 Inglis Australian Easter Yearling Sale for $120,000. Relations to Formality include Jolly's Cafe, Jolly's Pearl and Typhoon Jolly. The Group 2 Chelmsford Stakes, the race everybody went there to see, the appearance of Winx, and it was another winning one. This daughter of Street Cry out of Vegas Showgirl, of course, sold for what seems like a pretty modest amount of money these days, $230,000 at the 2013 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sales. Winx aiming for her third Cox Plate, and it looks well within reach. Second home behind her after leading them up was Red Excitement from the Gerald Ryan team, a son of Excites, and the third place getter, Distant, was Chocant, a 5-year-old gelding by Shocking. The Group 2 Tramway Stakes over 1,400 metres, and Happy Clapper mowed them down, trained by Patrick Webster, a 7-year-old gelding by Teofilo, out of the Encosta Delago mare, Busking. Not offered at the yearling sales, Happy Clapper. His winning relations include Gig, On the Fiddle, Santana, Street Art, and White Coffee. He ran down Tom Melbourne in the last furlong. And Invincible Gem was the third place getter in the Group 2 Tramway Stakes at Randwick yesterday. And that's a wrap on all things that happened north of the border. Welcome back to Talking Horses. Star Spangled Banner is certainly enjoying a resurgence at the moment. He sired a stakes winner in France, the mare Meliora, winning the listed Grand Prix de Fontainebleau for the second year in a row. Sebastian Hutch from Coolmore joining us on the program this morning. Hi, Sebastian.
Morning, Joe. How are you?
Very well. This winner in France for Star Spangled Banner is important, isn't it?
Yeah, look, he's been a horse that's been beset by misfortune through the early part of his stud career. What few runners he's had have performed exceptionally well. Meliora is one of those. She's winning that race for second year in a row, as you said. I mean, he's one of these stallions who really we should be in awe of, because what he's achieved from such few representatives is incredible. His figures in Europe are particularly strong. He had the Wow Signal, Anthem Alexander, this filly, Home of the Brave, host of other high-class horses in his first crop, and similarly in Australia, he had Off the Brave in his first crop of two-year-olds and a bunch of smart other horses, Mr. Individual, the Corsons, and Surf and Safari for Paul Perry. So now that the horse has graduated back to a stage in his career where his fertility is essentially commercially acceptable, his fertility has been outstanding for the last 18 months to 2 years, we're graduating back to a point where he's capable of reasserting himself as a commercial force, and that's something that we're all very enthusiastic about.
Yeah, and this result in France and the horses that are going to be emerging on the track in the not-too-distant future certainly give him a greater shot at commercial success. Now, his stats from his early small crops of foals are highly impressive. 44 winners from 62 runners in both hemispheres, 8 stakes winners, with 5 of them being group winners, headed by the Group 1 winner, the Wow Signal that you mentioned.
Yeah, his figures are staggering. I mean, you're left wondering if he'd been suitably fertile, what he might have achieved on a broader scale with the... I remember his first season at Coolmore Australia. He was scheduled to cover an incredible book of mares on the back of what obviously he'd achieved in Australia and what he then subsequently went on and achieved with Aidan O'Brien in Europe. And unfortunately, like what he covered, a certain percentage of those mares, his fertility wasn't what it needed to be to sustain a commercial presence. But, you know, there isn't an element of what if with him. Fortunately, and credit to Anthony Mitten and the team at Rosemont, they persevered with him for a number of seasons to the point whereby his fertility has improved progressively. He's shuttled for the last number of seasons, where his fertility in Ireland has again been excellent. So his improved fertility essentially gives him a second chance, so to speak, to prove himself the commercial force and the quality stallion that we believe he is. And to be perfectly honest, I mean, a horse with his proven track record of being able to produce at least race horses like he has done means he represents incredible value for people looking for a value stallion in the Hunter Valley. It's easy for us to say as stud masters, you promote your own stallions, but, you know, when you scrutinise what's available and the prices they stand for, you know, he really does represent a great opportunity for people looking for value.
Yeah, well, his stud fee is so reasonable, Sebastian, at just $16,500.
Well, look, it's important for us that now that his fertility is back at a level that means he can cover bigger books of mares, that we get numbers to him. You know, he covered, he was high 80s, low 90s last year. We'd like to think that he might cover that and a bit more again this year. Conception rate was excellent. He has a reasonably sized crop of three-year-olds relative to what he's had in the past, but then his two-year-old crop is bigger again. And, you know, over the next few years, particularly this season's foal crop and subsequent foal crops, we're going to be seeing more and more Star Spangled Banners, and on the evidence or all the limited evidence we have of what he's capable of doing as a stallion, that's something that's exciting to the market.
What's the key to getting a horse's fertility to improve Sebastian and become more consistent?
Oh, in the case of particular horses, it's generally management. There are obviously some fertility experts in Australia and around the world that, in the case of this horse, were consulted. But the reality with him, in his very specific case, is that it's been very much about time and patience. Generally, in a lot of cases, fertility is, in our experience, degenerative. It regresses with age. But in the case of this horse, the time that he's been allowed as he's matured has meant that his fertility has improved. I don't believe there's any specific scientific explanation for it. I understand that a number of experts that considered his situation found it difficult to see the capacity for improvement in his situation. But as I say, credit to Anthony Mitten and his team at Rosemont. They identified a routine with which the horse was really comfortable with. You know, they managed the horse conservatively. They only bred good breeding mares to him. He was bred conservatively, like he wasn't overtaxed on a daily basis. He was kept really happy and healthy as a horse. And as the years have gone by and his fertility showed improvement, that routine has evolved to the point of where we're at now, where his fertility is in excess of 75%. So, you know, it's a great result for everybody.
That's terrific news, because he's such a good producer and getting such great results with the horses he does have on the ground. Now, American Pharoah has been greeted here in Australia with much fanfare, as you'd expect, the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years and the first to stand down under. How has he been received, particularly at the recent stallion parades you've been hosting in the Hunter Valley?
We're very lucky that the Magner family deemed it appropriate to send the horse down here for a breeding season. It's a tremendous endorsement of their view of the Australian breeding industry. They saw it as an opportunity for Australian breeders to have exposure to what is one of the most competent racehorses, one of the most talented racehorses that there's been anywhere in the world for the last 20, 30, 40 years. And while obviously we were naturally very excited to have him come to Australia, even we've been overwhelmed by the response to the horse. That the enthusiasm for this horse from domestic breeders has been absolutely staggering. And, you know, we've witnessed it firsthand over the course of the last 3 weeks since the horse arrived on the farm. You know, the familiarity that people have with him. I mean, his Triple Crown was well covered in Australia, but I suppose we might have underestimated the extent to which people really were interested in it. And on the evidence of the visitors we've had, people genuinely were interested and have a fascination with him. And on a professional level, the interest in him and his qualities from the elite breeders in Australia and Australasia has been incredible. We've also had investors from other parts of the world look to source mares in Australia to breed to him. So he's just started covering a fantastic book of mares, and really it's very exciting for all concerned.
What's he like as a type of horse, and particularly his personality, now that you've had some time to get to know him?
Structurally, he's to all intents and purposes a flawless specimen. As you know, the Triple Crown is a hugely arduous sequence of races for any racehorse. You know, the physical test of a racehorse that presented by the Triple Crown is, to all intents and purposes, overwhelming for most horses. The attrition rate out of the Triple Crown is traditionally quite high. And even in the case of horses that manage successfully compete through the Triple Crown, more often than not, they find it difficult to rebound through the second half of the season. So it's a testament to the fortitude and the constitution of this horse that he was able to win the Triple Crown, as you say, the first horse in 37 years to do so, but then progressed through the second half of the season to the point where his form through the second half of the season, or the merit of his form, probably exceeded even what he'd achieved through winning the Triple Crown. So he was an awe-inspiring racehorse, and you can see why when you appraise him physically. Like he hasn't got a mark on his joints. He must have been the most incredibly tough and sound horse. When you think how, as I say, attritional racing on dirt is, he's physically perfect. Great through his knees, great through his front limbs. He's a lovely size and shape, big hip to him, loads of girth. He's a tremendously fluent, effortless mover. He's this lovely temperament. He's a great colour. You know, if you're looking for a prototype racehorse, or a prototype elite racehorse, he's basically it.
There's no doubt about you, Irishman. You've got a terrific turn of phrase when it comes to assessing a racehorse or a stallion. What's he like personality-wise?
Again, look, he's like it sounds like we're overly effusive about it, but if you sit down and appraise what he did, it's easy to be that way about him. And temperament-wise, well, to do what he did, you know, you can, again, going back to the Triple Crown, when he was trained primarily as a two-year-old in California. None of the Triple Crown races are in California. You've got to travel through the central states and then to the east coast. So there's a lot of travel involved, and a lot in a very short space of time. And to be able to do that, obviously you've got to have a particular sort of temperament. Horses that are highly strong and horses that aren't amenable to change in routine just can't cope with that. So he was fantastic. I mean, Bob Baffert, who's an exceptional trainer, a world-class trainer, you know, he was generally in awe of the horse and his ability to cope with every challenge that he was faced with. And we see it here in a different sense since he's come to Australia. It's a change of routine, change of environment, and he's adapted to it beautifully. I mean, we've had any number of photographers and camera people who come to see him and like to see him in his paddock, all of whom are essentially left disappointed by the fact that each and every morning when he goes out to the paddock, he goes out, he takes three steps, he has a roll, and then he puts his head down and starts eating grass. You know, he's not a horse. You know, he just doesn't overly tax himself in the paddock. He's just very straightforward to deal with.
And he's done more than enough, I guess, as a racehorse.
Yeah, look, and the other thing that's likeable about him is he loves the attention. He knows he's a good horse. He carries himself in the manner of a good horse. He's a real presence about him. And he really enjoys the attention. He's a lot like Piero in that respect. These great horses, they love the attention.
What sort of book of mares has he got for this season? And what are the numbers looking like?
The response from him has been very strong to all intents and purposes. If we were basing his book on expressions of interest and tentative bookings within the first 24 hours of announcing his fee, he'd have been full there and then. Obviously, since then, we've looked to try and manage his book to the point where we're facilitating the best mares, the best breeders, and cognizant of the fact that this is a horse that works very hard in the States, and we need to be diligent with the numbers that he covers here. We have, as I said earlier, been overwhelmed by the response to him. You know, there are people who, may have been skeptical about using him at the time of his announcement, who've since been to see the horse and have left with the view that he's a horse they have to breed to, and that's probably the biggest compliment we could pay to the horse. Even the skeptics now want to breed to him. And so as a consequence, the demand far exceeds supply. You know, we're going to have to be conservative about how we manage him through the season. We've been reluctant to go into specifics as to what mares he's going to cover because, look, at the end of the day, next March or next February, when the coverings are released by the studbook, people are going to see what he covered. It's going to be a fantastic book of mares. We've just got to be diligent about working through and making sure that we can get all those good mares into the book and keep everybody as happy as possible.
Exciting to have him here in Australia. Great to catch up with you, Sebastian. Thanks very much for your time on Talking Horses.
Pleasure, Joel. Enjoy the spring.
Sebastian Hutch from Coolmore joining us on the program. We'll be back with more right after this break. Welcome back to the program. Next, an international flavour. Matt Hill recently visited Korea and he caught up with one of Seoul's leading jockeys, Johan Victoire, ahead of the Korea Cup and the Korea Sprint. Both of those races will be shown here in Australia on Sunday, September 10. Here's Matt Hill with Johan Victoire.
Well, here joining me on RSN from Seoul is well-known jockey Johan Victoire, who Australian punters will get very used to seeing in the form guide. Johan, thank you so much for joining me, and you're really enjoying your time in Seoul so far.
Yeah, thank you very much, and yeah, I'm really enjoy here. I just arrived a couple of weeks before. Like everybody know, I'm still stay 1 year in Australia, and I'm very happy to ride a winner in Australia. I know it's a new experience and new challenge for me, and very happy about that.
Before we talk about racing in Korea, tell me about your time in Australia, because you're working with one of the most famous names in Gay Waterhouse, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. I work 1 year with Gay Waterhouse, so she teach me many things and helped me to improve again my races ride, yes. And I'm very happy what she do for me, and it's really incredible to work for her. So I never forget my time in Australia.
And what did you think about our race courses? You would have seen some interesting tracks in the city and also in the country. What did you make of them?
Yeah, you know, like when I ride in France before, I do the same thing. I like to travel. But in Australia, I see something is every track is really safe. So that is the first point, is really important for the jockeys and trainer and horses. So yeah, I'm very happy, and the condition track is always on the good time, yeah. And the people look around all the time to make that like the Australian, yeah, race coming. So very good for that.
And now racing in Seoul, they race upwards of three times a week at Busan and also at Seoul, and lots of races, 12 or 13 race cards, so you jockeys have a busy day.
Yeah, exactly. So for myself, I'm very happy when I'm busy, so that is good. 12 races or sometimes 11 is not easy, but yeah, still, like, my condition is good. And I'm fitter than I can be most of the time on the overseas, so I'm very happy about that. And sometimes we have to be focused, and can be a long day, but it's good.
Now tell me about the track, because in France and Australia and other countries you've ridden a lot of turf tracks, but this is a real heavy sand. What are the main differences that you see in racing here on the sand?
Yeah, exactly. Many countries I go, but it's the first time I ride on the track like that. The first week you need a little bit time to adapt, because it's not so easy, because like you say, it's a little bit heavy track, so the race go fast, and not many horses like the kickback, so you have to change your style, and it's for that I look many of video of Korean style and jockey in Korea, and it's a little bit different, but after when you get the sync, is really nice, and
yes,
and it's just like I said, the race go fast, and you have to be sure your horse feel good and
yes,
can keep going. So
does that mean that early on in the race you would push a horse faster as opposed to other countries? Because in France races tend to go a bit slower, whereas here most of the jockeys are riding fast out of the barriers.
Yeah, exactly, because I think 90% of the race you won the race behind the star, because if you miss a little bit your start after that, like I say, the horse get many kickback, and after that your race can be a little bit harder for you,
yeah.
So it's much better to ask your horse a little bit more than you can, and after you can find a good position and do the rest. So,
and last week when it was very heavy rain, you rode your first winner here. Well, how does the track go when it's very wet?
When the track is very wet, the track is quicker.
Yeah.
So my horse I won last time is my first winner in Australia 2 weeks before that, so last week is a good race for him and a good test, and he ran really different style, because the first time when I win on him I get a easy good position, but with the wet track and quicker, my horse don't know really what's happened.
Yeah.
So you have to be strong all the way, because like I say, the jockey or the horses here never stop, they always keep going, so sure. You have to believe you can do it, so it's what that is.
And in a couple of weeks the international races are here, and I know Australian jockey Nashra Will is going to be here riding a horse from Hong Kong, so that must be fun to ride against jockeys from around the world.
Yeah, exactly. I'm very happy, and hopefully I can help if they need. And I'm lucky to have a ride too on both races, so very happy about that. But really exciting to see overseas jockey coming and see the experience I had here. So very happy.
Well, the Australian punters are going to get used to seeing your name in the form guides at the Seoul track. So congratulations with what you've done so far, and thank you for talking to us.
Yeah, thank you very much. And like I say, yeah, I have a couple of good horses coming soon. So very
Fantastic.
Happy and very exciting to help the punter, and hopefully the Australian people start to follow me again.
And that's it for this week's edition of Talking Horses. I hope you enjoyed the program. Our thanks to special guests Sebastian Hutch and Wally Daly, and also Matt Hill for his contribution and that great interview with Johan Victoire. Look forward to your company again on the program next week. Until then, take care. Bye for now.